And let's go ahead and move into tradition seven, and that would be Sumit.
Hello, my name's Sue. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Hi, I'm excited to be here. I'm just going to start off with my AA Facebook-like stats. My sobriety date is September 25th, 2006. So I've been sober 13 years. I live in Seattle, and my home group is the Sunday night speakers meeting. So, as the name suggests, the meeting's on a Sunday night, and it's a speaker meeting, you know. And like just to like I always like to mention that I drank because it's an AA meeting, and you know, a little bit about my cervix experience as I spent 7 years in general service. And AA is a very strange place because I had been fired at 5 years of sobriety and at 6 years of sobriety as an accountant because I was a really shitty accountant. And yet I still became elected as a treasurer for my District 40 in San Jose. And you know, and so yeah, it's just this weird place, and they trusted me. And when I the time I spent in San Jose was a great example of where, you know, money and spirituality met. You know, there was a lot of programs to educate GSRs and a lot of PI CPC type of work, and it was just a great place to be of service. And then I moved to Seattle, and there was a district that needed a treasurer, and I became the treasurer for 2 years. And that was more of the district's desperation than anything else, because I told them that I was fired a couple of times as an accountant. And you know, and that place was a great example of how, you know, money could hinder our focus on the primary purpose. And you know, because we would have 3 hour district meetings, and 2 hours was just spent on discussing money, and nothing was discussed about the alcoholic who still suffers, you know. And so whenever I think about the seven tradition or any tradition, I think it's always important to think about our primary purpose. And you know, our primary purpose is to stay sober and to carry the message to the alcoholic that still suffers, you know. And I always like to think about that when I'm going in. And I'm going to read the long form of the AA of the seven tradition, and then kind of just discuss a little bit of the history and explain a little bit about what my understanding of that and the long form, you know, of the seven tradition. The AA groups themselves ought to be fully self-supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members. We think that each group should soon achieve this ideal, that any public solicitation of funds using the name of Alcoholics Anonymous is highly dangerous, whether by groups, clubs, hospitals, or other outside agencies, that acceptance of large gifts from any source or of contributions carrying any obligation whatever is unwise. Then to review with much concern those AA treasuries which continue beyond prudent reserves to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. Experience often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as futile disputes over property, money, and authority, you know. And a little bit about the history and my understanding of what happened is, I think, you know, AA's always had expenses from like the coffee pot to where people met, and that initially I think people met at you know, at AA members' places, and they used to have parlors in those days, or we call living rooms, and they met in those places. And you know, AA's themselves or like friends of AA's absorbed that cost initially. And you know, as AA grew, I think we outgrew that generosity. And I think also, like, if AAs are like me, we also you know, we outstayed our welcome, you know. And I think the need became like, it became like this increasingly apparent for AAs to become like, to have an income stream, right, or revenue stream. And in the early days, Bill A, if I'm you know, he was a grandiose thinker like myself, and he was thinking that he would go to like philanthropic organizations and people like the Jeff Bezos or the Bill Gates of that time, and they would kind of fund and bankroll the AA stuff. And I think what Bill had in those days in his mind, and just as grandiose like myself, he was like thinking that we would have like an army of paid 12-step missionaries and chains of of AA hospitals and libraries of all the books that the AAs would, you know, they were going to write on recovery and that. And one of the dudes that they approached was a guy called John D. Rockefeller. And he was like, I guess, the Bill Gates of the time. And, you know, Bill, and he kind of threw a wet blanket on Bill's lofty aspirations. And he said something along the lines where he was like, look, I'm afraid money will spoil this thing, you know. And but at the same time, he endorsed AA and the work of AA. And I think, you know, that point was probably one of the many turning points of in AA history, because those early AAs realized that one important truth, that who pays the piper calls the tune. You know, I got sober at 26 and I only moved out of my parents' house at 27. And for all those years, you know, my parents could tell me what to do. And then when I left the house, you know, and I became self-supporting, there was very little that my parents could tell me what to do and how to live my life, you know. And I think it's a very similar principle with AA, you know. And I think, and when, what happened then, you know, and that ties to like that part in that long form, that acceptance of large gifts from any source or of any source or contributions carrying any obligation, whatever, is unwise. And AA, you know, I think AAs are pretty extremists like myself, and they went from one thing where like we need lots of money to like, hey, we need no money at all, right? Because they were having a lot of these problems. People were donating AA clubs, and then those donations resulted in outside interference, and you know, people were using AA to make money, and so money became like this bad thing to like people like early AAs like just had a proper disregard for money, but then we just became broke. And I think that's where the prudent reserve came to play. And that's the part in the long form of the seventh tradition that says, then too, we view with much concern that those AA treasuries, which continue beyond prudent reserves to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. Experiences often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as futile disputes over property, money, and authority. And I think that's where AA and them think about, where they talk about corporate poverty, because we have these bare running expenses and that, but also a plus a prudent reserve. And I think we don't build on those prudent reserves, so we don't get bright ideas, right? And those bright ideas don't divert us from our primary purpose. I know every time I've had like my increase in savings, I have these bright ideas. At the start of the pandemic, you know, I wasn't eating out. I had all these savings. I started to buy a pair of sneakers a week. I don't even wear sneakers. You know, imagine what AAs would do with all this increase in reserves. And so, you know, I'm going to skip now to like, I'm going to talk a little bit about the General Service Office and like current day and the pandemic, you know. And, you know, like, I think it's important for us to kind of be self-supporting at our group level and cover the rent and other expenses and that, you know, it's also our responsibility and privilege to cover the expenses of AA as a whole, whether it's intergroup, central offices, the district's General Service Office. And we have to somehow ensure that those groups also remain self-supporting, right? And this is to ensure that we don't need funds from external sources and nothing diverts us from my primary purpose. And, you know, since the, like with the pandemic, you know, it's affected businesses and organizations across every sector, right? And the General Service Office is no difference. You know, I didn't realize this until I started researching this, you know, and up until like March of this year, the average cost of running the General Service Office is about $1.4 million a month. And that's about $730,000 in literature sales and $670,000 in contributions. And when the pandemic hit and by April, that changed, right? Contributions dropped to $540,000 and book sales only were about $145,000. So that's about $700,000. In total. And so there was about a 700,000 shortfall. And so at the end of 2019, the General Service Office had a prudent reserve of 9.5 months. And in May, we had to withdraw about $303 million of our prudent reserve. So we have about 7 months left, right? And one of the principles of the prudent reserve is to help up with any emergencies. And, you know, the pandemic was an emergency. And I think it's important to understand what the actual General Service Office does. And I've kind of listed some points that I thought were interesting, right? And the General Service Office, the publishing department has coordinated translations of the Big Book in 70 languages and translations of other AA literature in more than 91 languages. Further translations are currently in process. Another thing that they do is each year the GSO staff corresponds to over 90,000 emails, letters, and phone calls from AA members, suffering alcoholics, professionals, students, the press, and others interested in AA. And thus, accurate and consistent information about AA is provided. And another one thing is that the corrections coordinator GSO responds to over 6,500 letters a year, primarily from incarcerated alcoholics. Letters often request literature, and many express gratitude for a Big Book supplied or a link to an outside member who can take a soon-to-be-released alcoholic to his or first meeting on the outside. And then another thing is that we have the AA.org, and there's about 40,000 visits to that per day. You know, and some other important facts is that to think about when we think about money is currently only 43% of the groups contribute to GSO, right? And in 2018, from like the studies that they did, that in order to keep GSO running, the cost of service per member is only $7.40. And it's not that much, you know, and I think about like, you know, when I go to meetings and initially I would just drop in $1 in the hat like they did in the 1950s. And I don't know where I got that idea from dropping in just $1, you know, until my sponsor told me differently. And the thing what to think about, they dropped off $1 in the hat in the 1950s. And if you do a quick Google search about inflation and that, $1 is worth $10.70 now, you know? And so like I can bitch and moan whenever my sponsor tells me to, you know, to put in more than $3 in the basket or now the virtual basket, but $3 is nothing compared to $10.70. You know, I just spent $6.92 at Starbucks for my croissant and coffee, you know, and I do that every morning. And, I think I'm going to I'm running out of time. So I'm just going to tell you a little bit about my story and how this really, and how I think about the seven tradition is when I finally hit bottom, you know, I had no idea where to go. And somebody suggested something, this ANA, you know, and I started to, I was a foreign student and I couldn't afford any, I couldn't afford any rehab facilities and that. And somebody just suggested this ANA deal. And so I looked in the yellow pages and I found the number of the Fresno Central Office, you know, and I called that number and I got sober on a Sunday. And the first meeting I went to was the following Friday, but I called that number at that central office every single day. And I was so terrified. And there was somebody on the other end, some alcoholic, you know, who answered the phone and referred me to a meeting. And, you know, and I didn't know this then. It was probably a person who was given his or her time away for free doing 12-step work. And it was only later on did I realize that that number I was calling at that central office, that, you know, that central office needed to pay rent. That central office had utilities. That central office had a phone bill, you know, and I had no idea about that until I got sober and I started working with the sponsor, you know, when I was in the Bay Area and I used to go to a lot of those summer assemblies for general service, there used to be a lot of workshops about where money and spirituality mix. And they would say, how do we get these groups and how do we get these people to contribute more money? to contribute more money to general service, you know. And the thing is, with the third tradition, there's no dues or fees, and so they would always come to it's the responsibility and obligation of the trusted servants to carry the message of the importance of contributing to the various functions of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I've had the same sponsor for 13 years, and people always ask me why. There's nothing really spectacular about my sponsor. I think he's an amazing individual, you know. And I think the reason why is that he's been a great example. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, he would show me, I know he was a pretty broke dude, yet he gave pretty freely of his time and he gave pretty freely of his money. You know, I'm going to end with what Bill W. said, and I'm going to, you know, in 1950, he said, our spiritual way of life is safe for future generations if, as a society, we resist the temptation to receive money from the outside world. But this leaves us with the responsibility, one that every member ought to understand. We cannot skimp when the treasurer of our group passes the hat. Our groups, our areas, and AA as a whole will not function unless our services are sufficient and their bills are paid. You know, and as I end, I think about one thing about the responsibility statement. I am responsible when anyone anywhere reaches out to help. I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I'm responsible. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. Excellent job. Wonderful. Thank you.
Standing ovation.
Woohoo. Yeah. Thank you.